Hey, it's Christine from Storyworthy. Today on the show, accomplished director Michael Pressman shares an intimate story about finding his soulmate and succeeding in marriage on the fourth try.
We both got married very, very young to different people. But I never forgot that night. And then she looked at me and said, "Why haven't we been on each other's radar?" And I said, "You've always been on my radar."
Today on Storyworthy, director Michael Pressman talks about true love, finding it, losing it, and then finding it again. Stay close.
Hey, this is Michael Pressman, and you're listening to Storyworthy.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm coming to you from Los Angeles, California. And whether you guys are a longtime fan of the show or a new listener, welcome to Storyworthy. Now, I hope you guys had a chance to listen to the show last week with comedian and improviser Jenna Brister. Michael, this girl is so talented and so funny. She told a story about, it's not funny, it's sort of funny. She was at a Christian summer camp, and got into some trouble, and then like the counselors and the people that worked there were like the most unchristian people you can imagine, and she got really hurt. Anyway, you guys, yeah, go back and listen to Jenna Brister's story about summer camp, and it was just crazy. In fact, the title of the story is Near Death Experience.
Wow.
I mean, that's how serious it was. So
I think this is going to be a lighter half hour here.
This will be a little bit lighter because today, you guys, I am here with director and producer Michael Pressman, and you bring forth the topic, Michael, finding my soulmate. Finding my soulmate. And, you know, it's funny because in life, I thought I found my soulmate, but then it turned out not to be.
Well, that can happen.
I mean, it happens.
Sure.
I mean, I'm one of those.
We're looking at number four, marriage number four.
Yeah.
So I thought it happened three times before.
Okay, right? So there we go. That's a great example because I've been married twice. And the soulmate guy, I didn't marry, but I may as well have. You think it's your soulmate, you turn around, not. So anyway.
In fact, go the opposite way. Try everything you can to not make this your soulmate. That's part of it.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
And then, listen to the signs. Listen to the cues.
That's right. And this is going to be great. I really look forward to hearing your story. But before we do get to Michael's story, I wanted to remind you guys to head over to storyworthypodcast.com and join my mailing list. Blah, blah, blah. You know I want that from you. And you love me. And so, you know, just do it. And thanks for supporting all the sponsors on the show today. Because really, you guys, when you support my sponsors, you're supporting me and my child. Thank you. All right, you guys,
yes.
He's here right now.
Looks
like
you're a beautiful child.
Oh, I do. Thank you. Yes. Well, listen, I'm really glad you're here. So let's get right to your story. You guys, Michael Pressman is a director and a producer, and he has worked across many genres and mediums in your very, very long career, including multiple episodes of the Emmy Award-winning series Law & Order, SVU, and Blue Bloods. Now, you directed the final 2 hours of the miniseries, the Law & Order miniseries about the Menendez brothers.
Yes.
With Edie Falco.
Yes.
And Heather Graham.
Yes.
Both tremendous actresses.
Yes. Both wonderful. Edie, I worked with every day for the last 2 hours. She's amazing. It was so intense. I cannot describe to you how intense it was because we dug deep into the psychology of the whole event.
And Edie Falco played the lawyer. Boy's lawyer.
Yes.
And would you explain to people what do you mean by the final 2 hours?
Well, it was 8 hours. It was a miniseries.
The miniseries was an 8-hour miniseries.
And I directed hours 7 and 8.
And so that's typical or normal in Hollywood, but people out there don't know that.
Correct.
In other words, you have one miniseries and multiple directors.
Correct. Lately, they've been doing some miniseries with one director, which is, you know, amazing and not a bad idea, actually. It's just it takes people work away from other directors, but the vision stays complete. But that's recent. You know, usually like on a TV series, I direct anywhere from 3 to 4 episodes a year of Law & Order SVU, and they shoot 22.
And that's because you couldn't possibly do 22, is that true?
That's correct.
So how long does it take to direct, like, of your life, of your
headspace? It's 3 weeks.
Three weeks to direct one episode.
Correct.
So if you did four or five in a year, you'd be working on that show for 15 weeks, about 2.5 months.
Right, but you need a couple of weeks to recover from those 3 weeks because you're not working normal hours. You're up at 5:30, you're home at 8 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
You know, the intensity. I describe directing a television episode like running a sprint.
Interesting.
You know, whereas directing a movie, which I've done, and I've done, over 10 films, is a marathon. You shoot for anywhere from 40 days to 50 days to 70 days, and then you edit for 3 months, and then you prepare for several months.
So
that's a year.
Thing, yeah,
whole different thing. But that's the marathon. The episode is a sprint.
I see. That's really interesting. I definitely know people don't realize that.
Yeah.
Yeah. You've also won 2 Emmys for the acclaimed series Picket Fences.
One of my favorite. Picket Fences is over 20 years now.
Yeah.
But we won 16 Emmys in 4 seasons.
Really?
Yeah.
So you went to the Emmy Awards every year.
Yep.
And is that one of the more fun awards? Or the Golden Globes are the most fun, right?
Golden Globes was the most fun, but I don't know how to say this. It's really fun when you win.
Yeah.
It's a drag when you lose. And then afterwards, it all doesn't really matter.
At the party?
Remembering it.
In life.
I mean, it's, you know, I used to make jokes about saying, I really want to know how the 3 or 4 people who didn't win feel.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the emotional stuff, you know? The winning is like, oh my God, I want to thank so-and-so and how great it is. And there's nothing better than going to an award show and coming home with an award.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not fair. You go to an award show and you don't take home an award. That's not fun.
So when you're on one side of the aisle, you know, as a director, producer, writers, you guys. And then when you see the stars on the other side, you know, the actors and the actresses who we see on television and in the movies, and you see them at an award show and they lose, do they take it harder than the director or the filmmaker?
No, I think everyone is braced. You know, you watch the Oscars,
yeah,
and everyone goes really expecting not to win. You have to.
I see.
Or it's too disappointing.
Yeah.
And then when you do win, you're shocked.
Yeah.
Generally so.
I see. You also got an Emmy nomination and a DGA nomination for your work on that hospital series, Chicago Hope.
Yes.
And when you work on a hospital show like that, I don't know why they make me laugh, but hospital shows, because the drama is so like innate.
Yeah. Yeah. It's also, you know, for directing, I mean, you can get very deluded about what you know and don't know. I mean, I could come home and say, you know, I just did a brain surgery. I did a heart surgery. I separated Siamese twins. You know, I know some doctors, you know, and I talk about what I've done. Oh, the best story that comes to my mind was I had a surgery once, very serious surgery about 7 or 8 years ago. And it was an emergency surgery, and I had an abscess on my spine. And I had got rushed into an operating room, and the surgeon, who was brilliant, looked a little like George Clooney, cross between George Clooney and Mandy Patinkin, and walked in and said, okay, you're fine, we're going to take care of you, don't worry. Have you had any surgeries before? And I was, you know, on some heavy meds, and I looked up and said, I haven't had surgery, but I've directed surgery. And he goes, what? And I said, well, you know, I'm a director, Chicago Hope, Grey's Anatomy. And he goes, I hate those shows. And I said, well, please don't take it out on me.
Yeah.
And he said, I won't, but oh my God. So there you have it.
And it must be difficult, I would think, for the actors.
Surgery was successful, by the way.
Oh, good. Yeah. Well, you look good. You look really great.
I'm in better shape than I was then.
Awesome. That's exciting. I think it's funny to hear actors and actresses using medical jargon that they obviously have no idea what they're talking about. They're just looking at the script and they're using these words, but
scalpel, stat, all that stuff.
Yeah, but even more so, they use very difficult names of diseases and conditions,
right,
and they make it sound like they really, I mean, I guess that's the deal, they're actors.
That's their job, but I will say that of all the actors I've worked with in medical shows, Mandy Patinkin studied how to sew.
Wow.
So when we did the close-ups of the sutures and everything, it was his hands.
Interesting.
And he was really good at it.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't want him to be the actual surgeon, but
yeah.
I mean, for the show, he could.
So you think sewing is just like stitching like stitches? Is it the same?
Yeah.
Really?
I mean sort of. I don't know exactly. All I know is that when it comes right down to it, there's some sewing and stitching that's got to be done, and sometimes it's done by hand.
I guess so. I just feel like, I know, just to keep putting a needle in somebody's body. But I guess since they've got everything draped and you don't like see anybody's face or anything.
That's correct.
So you're just looking at that
some objectivity,
spot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, God. It just sounds horrible. Hey.
I know, we've got a little off the subject.
We could totally just talk about hospitals easily for a half hour. But you bring forth the topic, finding my soulmate. And I'm very anxious to hear your story. So let's get to it right away. You guys can find Michael over on Facebook and also check out his Instagram account at mpressman333. All right, folks, wherever you are, put your hands together for Michael Pressman.
Okay, thank you, thank you. So we were talking about the problems of recognizing whether you have a soulmate or not. And this was my fourth marriage. Sunday was the anniversary of 1 year. So you could even say that I'm a little overly optimistic. But in this particular case, I have to back up and explain that I was committed to never getting married again. And the idea of finding my soulmate was a thought that I gave up on. Just gave up on. My wife is, I have to say this, is age appropriate. We are the same age. We are both 68. She has grown children, 40 and 38, and she has four grandchildren, and I have a 20-year-old. So there's a big family now. The interesting part of how this all happened was... we actually knew each other as children. We grew up in the same apartment building on the Upper West Side. And I always had a little crush on her. Now, even at 15 and 16, I did have a crush on her, but she, at 15 and 16, was not looking at the 15 and 16-year-old boys. We also found out years later that we were in a play together, which we both forgot. Because we used to go to this acting work group at the YMHA, and it was a musical called The Prince Who Learned Everything Out of Books, and she played one of the princesses, and my younger brother was the prince, and I was an ogre, which was very funny, but we actually didn't know that we were in the play together. But we had summers together on Fire Island off of Long Island, where we, she was a mother's helper, and I worked there, and when we were 20... we did have one evening together when we wandered around to the beach at night and we made out, and she was going through, she had gotten married at the age of 20 and she was in crisis and I was debating whether to get married, and we both got married very, very young to different people. But I never forgot that night, of which, by the way, she doesn't remember, which is fine. I don't hold it against her. But there was always something there. And the joke I say to her is, look, we've been married 1 year, but we've really been married for 40 years. It's just to different people. So there you have it. You know, we've been through the wars. We've had the journeys. 3 years ago, oh, and then we saw each other two or three times or four times. She called me once. I emailed her once. We had lunch 15 years ago, we saw each other once on the New Year's Eve, always with different people passing by, and I'm going, there's Maya. And there was always something out of reach. Her name is Maya Danziger. She teaches a meditative writing program called Relax and Write. Also check it out. It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing, because that's what brought us together. I opened up Omega Institute catalog and saw that she was teaching. And I went, oh, that's what Maya's doing, because she had a very successful career as an actress in her 20s and 30s in New York, Broadway, movies, soap operas, and commercials. So I used to see her all during my years, and we've even joked about, well, how come I never cast her? I said, it just never happened. I can't explain it. Anyway, I see that she's teaching, and I contact her. It's about 3 years ago. So she's like, oh my God, I haven't heard from you in 10 years. I knew she was living with somebody. She thought I was married. I said, I'd like to take a workshop. So I sign up for a workshop and then I cancel because I get a job directing Law and Order, SVU. She understands, she knows the business, and it happens two more times. So now she's going, what's going on here? He keeps contacting me like, well, what's this about? And I say to her, listen, I'm coming to LA. I was living in New York at the time. She lives in LA. I said, let's have lunch. She said, well, we have to have it like Monday because I leave Tuesday to Maine to see my children. I said, Maine? I have a home in Maine. I said, I go there every summer. That was amazing. So we go and we have lunch. We talk for 2.5 hours. We go walk down the hill, have a long lunch, come back. And we basically cover everything. She explains her financial picture. I tell her I'm in debt. We talk about where we've come from. And then she said the most amazing thing. She said, the only thing I'm asking for in a relationship is honesty and authenticity. And that hit me hard because I think that I've struggled with that intense connection. So that really hit me hard. And then we said goodbye, and we gave a hug and a kiss, and it didn't stop for about 5 minutes. And then she looked at me and said, why haven't we been on each other's radar? And I said, you've always been on my radar. So we said, we better see each other again. So she came back from Maine. We had another long lunch. And then I was very honest to say, I have personal issues that I have to deal with. I took care of my other situation. I was not in a relationship that was I was committed to. But I decided that I was going to, everything was going to come clean. We got together 3 months later. It was so easy, comfortable, exciting, romantic, that she even said to me, I mean, at one point I said to her, I said, listen, you know, you're getting involved with a very neurotic guy. And she said, stop. I knew your mother. You don't have to explain anymore. And then at one point she said, you know, I proposed marriage after 3 months. I said, listen, I have to tell you, I'm serious. She said, I get it. I said, so I see marriage in the future. And she said, well, just so you know, the answer is yes. And I was like, oh my God. So, but she said, I've never had an engagement. She's always gotten like a hippie marriage and gone to a church, you know, master the justice of the peace and had a party at someone's house. But here, let's do the real deal. So I proposed in Maine when I took her to the house. And we waited 1.5 years so we could acclimate the families. We took our time. And then got married last October in her backyard in Studio City. But I want to explain one additional element that sort of addresses this soulmate thing. There's some coincidences that we have been noticing that are very strange, and it has to do with the apartment building we grew up in. The address was 333. The reason I thought about telling this story today is I got your address, 3338, and I went, oh my God. Well, I'm driving here, I have the picture, and there's a vehicle in front of me that's the 333 something. I will call her, and I'll notice, or she'll leave me a voice message, and it'll be 333. Or I'll go to the supermarket in Chicago, and the supermarket is 333, and I'll take a picture, and I'll send it to her. And it keeps going on and on and on. It doesn't stop. It didn't stop with you. It didn't stop with the car in front of me on the freeway that I snapped the picture of. I'm going, this is so bizarre. And that prompted me to say, I'll tell this story. I'll tell the 333 soulmate romance. So I asked Maya, I said, what do you think 333 is about? Why are we getting these messages? And her answer is the end of the story. She said, we're getting a message that in this insanely chaotic, crazy, difficult world, there's some order and we are safe, and there is order to this relationship, and that it has a kind of safety in the fact that it was meant to be. So that's the only way I could say it's Beshert or it's my soulmate, because it just feels complete.
Wow, that's really beautiful. Now wait, you'd been married 3 times before.
Yes.
And how many had she been married?
3.
So here, have you had a threesome? That's really the question I have.
No.
No, I'm kidding.
No.
That is really strange. Honestly, all those threes.
Can't explain it.
But it's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's really beautiful. Now, when you were on Fire Island with her all those years ago, first of all, what's a mother's helper?
She was a taking care of children, a family that had like 3 or 4 kids.
So and, like a nanny.
A nanny.
I see. Yes, I just never heard that word mother's helper, except in the Rolling Stones song, Mother's Little Helper.
Right, okay.
But that was about pills.
Yes.
And so that night, did you have sex that night or
no,
you just made out?
We just made out.
So you didn't like culminate this relationship until just over a year ago?
3 months after we started
dating.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow. It all sounds so mature.
Frighteningly so, huh?
Like going to lunch and talking and talking.
Oh, and then she insisted on a prenuptial. So like you should protect yourself. I said, I should have done it with the other marriages. What am I doing it with this for? But we did it all. We, you know.
And so why would you just throw out your whole financial picture to her? That sounds very personal at the beginning like that, you know.
She was telling me, we were talking about our work and she was talking about her work. And I was basically saying that, I mean, when she started telling me that, you know, she's, she has planned, she had been single for 6 years. I thought she was still involved. She thought I was married.
I see.
So all of a sudden, the whole nature of our lunch started to change because she thought I wanted to take the workshop. We're going to have lunch. We'll catch up. I thought she was living with somebody. The only clue was she said, come on over to the house and meet my new puppy. And I went, meet your new puppy? I said to myself, now, that doesn't sound like she's still living with that guy.
No.
But she didn't know I was divorced.
But you were seeing somebody else.
I was seeing somebody else, but it was not a relationship that was meant to be.
But how did you break it to that person?
Oh, that was devastating.
Breakups are insane.
That was so hard. It took me several months to finally be able to say that I didn't see us spending the rest of our lives together. That was devastating. God. That was the point. I had to say, it wasn't about, oh, I met somebody. It was really about, I don't see us spending the rest
of our
lives together.
But why? I'm just asking, okay? Because I've recently come out of a pretty bad thing. And I don't understand why people can't just use their words. So, like, you want honesty and authenticity, of course, with Maya, but now you had this other girlfriend and it took you a long time to use those words. Like, why couldn't you just say, hey, listen, I know this is not what you want to hear, but I have had some revelations recently and I don't think we're meant to be. Like, why did that take 6 months?
No, it didn't take 6 months. It took 2 months. It was circumstantially complicated.
I see.
There was plans we made for it. Was I saw Maya in December. There was a trip that was planned in January. I had lunch with Maya. I didn't know. I knew in my heart that I think I was careful in knowing that I had to deal with a separate relationship, which, by the way, that other relationship was super complicated because we had spent 6 months apart and then we decided to get back together and then I met Maya. I needed to sort this out in my head. I didn't know where things were going with Maya.
Yeah.
I just had an instinct. So what I had to work out in my own head was, and it took a couple of months, was to be able to say to this person, regardless of the other relationship, because maybe Maya and I wouldn't have worked out.
Sure.
I had to end that relationship and be prepared to be alone.
Right, right. I guess I just... you know, I've dated a guy before who was a comedian, like, you know, kind of a famous comedian. And he would say, Christine, I'm giving away his accent. Christine, I can talk to 10,000 people, but I can't talk to you. And I'm like, fuck you, man. That's bullshit.
Well,
Use your words and say what you're thinking.
Well, the problem is that I was with somebody who wasn't listening.
Oh,
so
God.
I would say things like, I think we should spend some time. I got to see other people and da da da. Well, that's okay. I mean, everything was this. I had to finally go, I don't see us spending.
Yeah, you have to use those real words that are flat out.
And that had a finality to it that was. kind of devastating.
It is devastating.
For me as well, by the way, in the act of doing.
Well, the end of a relationship is always a loss. I mean, even if it was a bad relationship,
and a wonderful person, by the way. Yeah. I'm not saying there was anything I could point to that would be, like, terrible.
Right.
It just wasn't right.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. It's just, I feel like, you know, we go on through life and we just, even if we know ahead of time it's not right, we keep saying, well, we got this party to go to, and then we're going to go skiing, and then Christmas is coming, and I already told her we're going there. And then I think that, and I feel like saying, stop everything. We got to be adults here. If you know and you have cards that you're holding and not telling me about, it's not fair.
I agree.
Okay. So you and Maya have had this discussion that you're going to be forward with each other all the way through.
Yes.
You have to be.
Of course.
And that's what will make it last.
And that's what feels different.
Yeah. And since you've known her, since you were a child, that there's some like safety there or something.
Well, yeah. I think what it is it feels like there's history and there's family, and yet it feels completely new.
Mm-hmm.
It's like we're still learning about each other every day.
That is so beautiful.
So, you know, the only thing that I know is that when she talks about the difficulty of her relationship with her father, I said, I remember your father was very aloof. I remember, that's what he was.
Yeah. Your house in Maine, is it near her kids' houses?
Yes, about an hour.
Really?
Yes.
That's ironic.
Oh, I know.
How fortunate was that?
Amazing. In fact, they've moved in, you know, in the summer. It's like, we're coming up for a week, we're coming up for this.
What a blast.
I know.
Where are you, Bar Harbor or something?
Between Camden and Belfast.
How lovely.
On the water, gorgeous place.
And so do you have like lobster roll sandwiches all the time?
Oh, yeah,
and
too many.
Is that the best, right?
I will advertise Margaret's Lobster Rolls on Route 1. It's the best lobster roll in Mid-Coast Maine.
That like makes my mouth water.
I know.
I've been to Cadillac Mountain.
That's beautiful.
That's a really pretty place. You can kind of just drive all the way to the top.
When
or
did you go?
Or you can walk up. Oh, gosh, it's been like 20 years.
Oh, we got to come back.
Oh, my gosh, I loved it so much.
And we were there. Maya was there for 3 months. I was there for 2 months because I had to go to New York and direct SVU. And she looked at me and said, do I have to go back to New York? And then so we've been writing a screenplay.
Oh, neat. Together.
Yeah.
Oh, neat.
About a summer on Fire Island.
So, that's sweet.
Yeah.
Do you find, as a director and a producer of all these one-hour dramas, do you find that drama has seeped into your own life? Because it sounds like three marriages and, you know, it's pretty dramatic. Your whole life is a lot of drama.
Yeah, the difference is it's taken about 40-some years, so it doesn't feel like it's compacted into 60 minutes. You know, yeah. I mean, I don't feel that sense of drama in my life. I think I feel pretty
grounded.
Centered. Yeah, because, you know, my first marriage was a high school sweetheart.
Yeah, that's nothing. It's just like,
you know, but that was 13 years of my life, and she's a wonderful lady, and we helped each other grow, and we still have some contact. She's a wonderful person. She remarried. She has two children grown up. The second marriage was a rebound. The interesting thing is my second marriage, which was almost a year, less than a year, though I've still had some contact with her, lovely lady, just was a terrible mistake, was a rebound off of a relationship that I had with a woman that I would honestly say I was the only other woman I fell in love with, those feelings. And she died of lung cancer at 37.
Oh, how terrible.
And that set me back. Irony is, and I don't know what numbers mean, she grew up on the Upper West Side as well, but she grew up at 444.
So it's a whole, she was in a whole nother.
She was 444. Maya was 333.
Yeah, makes a big difference.
Yeah.
You're so funny.
Absolutely.
I find you very charming, though, because, you know, you've had these decades and decades in Hollywood, and it sounds like you've like kind of kept up like with being like, you know, hip and in touch with your emotions and your relationships. I'm just saying some people, they get married when they're 25 and they say, well, that's it. I'm not happy, but I got to pack it in.
Right,
we're done here. You know, like they don't think that there's choices. But yet when you're in your 40s and 50s and 60s and 70s, you still do have choices.
Well, I think there's several reasons. One, I come from a family of long life and longevity. My father lived to 98. My grandfather lived to 97.
Wonderful.
My uncle lived to 98. They were artists. My father, who survived World War II, wounded, almost killed. He survived cancer. He survived the blacklist, the McCarthy period. So many things. He was a positive man. He had this incredible positive attitude. He worked until he was 85. Also a director, directing us a daytime soap opera, One Life to Live, for 25 years.
No
I don't know
kidding.
How he did it, but he did it. My mother
no.
was a my mother was a dancer. Okay, so there's good genes and there's a good positive love of life attitude. That's number one. Number two, a lot of good therapy. Been in and out of the analyst's office pretty much all my life.
Yeah.
It certainly helps to be aware. And left Los Angeles 15 years ago and moved back to New York
mm-hmm.
and live in Brooklyn. Now we're back and forth. My son goes to college at Pitzer in Claremont, and Maya has a house in Studio City. So we are bi-coastal.
We are going
back and forth. But I think that there's some real pitfalls in just being in Los Angeles all your life and being in the movie business. It can really change you. And I walked away from that. I really did. Maya said to me, she's very funny, she said, you know, I just used to imagine that you just became one of these Hollywood film directors, but now that we're together, she realizes that's not the case at all.
Yeah, you're the same guy.
Yeah.
Well, it's a tricky thing to say, you know, you walked away, because you still have connections, and so it wasn't like you had...
Well, what's fun about the connections is that became the ones I stayed connected with, people who I actually developed good friendships with.
That's what I mean. I mean, you had the longevity. In other words,
right.
you had already had a level of a success.
Yes.
See, the thing is when a lot of people... myself included, you know, you come out to LA, you can't just walk away for 3 years because I've built up this momentum for 20, and I can't just say, well, I think I'll just hang it up for a while and come back, because I'll come back to nothing.
I know.
So you have to reach a certain level, and you were able to accomplish that. So it's not, you can't just
say, leave.
There was
one very big lucky thing also, which is when I left LA and I went with the idea that I didn't have any job in New York, all the television work started coming to New York. So I got the original Law and Orders and, Blue Bloods and Damages and In Treatment and so many shows.
Oh, did you work on In Treatment?
I did one episode.
I adored that guy.
What's
his name? Gabe?
Gabriel Byrne.
Gabriel Byrne. I love him.
Wonderful.
Where is he? What happened?
He's
a stage actor, isn't he?
He's been doing some wonderful work on stage.
Yeah, I think that's what it is.
I've seen him walking around in Maine. I saw him in town. I'm not going to say which town,
because
he may not want me to say it, but I saw him from a car.
That show In Treatment was like being in therapy.
It was.
To watch that show was like, oh my God, I get it. And you just follow, it was like three different storylines per episode, and you'd follow each storyline.
It was a wonderful series.
It was brilliant. I wonder, now why would that end, do you think?
I don't know.
Things just end and then other things stay around. Like, what is Grey's Anatomy? How is that staying around?
I don't know.
Is the and that shoots very close here to where we're sitting right now.
I know it does.
My ex-husband used to do lighting on that show, and he would drive the golf cart home to our apartment. He would take one of the golf carts on the lot and come home for lunch.
I can't explain any of that stuff.
Well, I am so happy for you.
Thank
it sounds
you.
Like you're in a great place.
I am.
I could talk to you forever.
I know.
You are
been...
fascinating.
Oh, thank you.
Really, I'm
Thank
so excited,
you.
And I'm really happy you brought forth this topic, finding my soulmate, because I'm still looking, and
I
may or may not, but I'm
you know
over
what?
It,
I'm gonna tell you something. You're gonna find your soulmate.
I'm over
you, it. No, you're not. No, you're not. You just have to let go for. Don't stop looking.
No, I'm not looking. I'm over it.
But I mean, it'll happen.
Yeah,
it'll
happen. Yeah. Well, we'll see. I'm not too worried.
It may happen in 5 years.
Yeah. Ugh. Ugh,
it may happen in 3 weeks.
You give me hope.
In which case, let me know. Because maybe, it's just like, well, first of all, I'm going to say a couple of things. In the search for a soulmate, and I probably should write the book, but what I was going to say is, you sort of can't stay alone. You've got to go out in the world, meet people, in circumstances.
Right, of course. Nobody's going to fall on your windshield out of the sky.
Yeah. And stay open and available.
Listen, Michael, if I run into somebody today and they say, give me a call, I'm at 333-444.
You're dead.
Then I'm gonna say, will you marry me?
Yeah.
I'll just say it right then.
Yeah. Or keep it a secret, and then when you get married, say, you're not going to believe this. I know you're not a big fan of holding back, but you might scare the person today.
All right, let me ask you something. I'm not saying you and Maya are getting tattoos, but let's just say, theoretically, would you get a tattoo with her?
No.
You guys should get 333 on your arm or something.
It's already there. You're I don't need sweet. A tattoo.
All right, you guys, we got to wrap it up. I want to thank you so much for listening today. Head over to Facebook and find Michael Pressman. And of course, join me over there as well. And like the Facebook page for Storyworthy. Would you do that? Yes? Yes. Thank you. And a big thank you again to all the sponsors on the show today. Really, you guys, when you support my sponsors, then you're supporting me. Thank you. And one more time, on behalf of the very talented Michael Pressman, thank you so much.
Oh, you are more than welcome. And thank you for having me.
You bet, man. Because
this was far more pleasurable than I thought it would be. I had no idea what to expect. You're a delight.
Well, there's a little flogging that's going to happen when we're done here, but that we'll keep that to ourselves. All right, you guys, my name is Christine Blackburn, saying, make it a story worthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.